Yes, so sorry, I was a minute or two late. My apologies. It took forever to get the computer up and running for reasons that pass human understanding, but there we go. All right, so this is a public call, so if you can stay off names and places, I would appreciate that. And do you want to start by reading your message or just telling me what the issue is?
I would like to read my message.
Good.
If I can find it. Yes. I'm almost 30 years old, and I have no career, no girlfriend, nothing to my name, and no anxiety over the situation that I put myself in. I am asking for your help because I don't know how to get myself out of this for good. Try different things and had some success, but it's short-lived and quickly go back to wasting time. And I know that soon enough I will have no time left at all to fix my life. I want to be productive. I want to do good in the world. I want to be the best damn father I can be. And I know for sure something is holding me back, and it is tied to my childhood. But for the life of me, I cannot figure it out by myself. Please help me.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're calling. How long have you been listening to what I do?
Around 5 years.
Okay, got it. All right. So, yeah, tell me a little bit about your childhood.
So, well, I don't really know much about it. I have no memories of it. All I know is from my sister's stories. Because I have an older sister, the second child, and she lived through it, right? My memories start at 5 years old. I don't know if you want me to tell you the whole story of my parents.
Whole story.
And then I start. Okay. So my parents met when they were in high school. They were 17 years old. From what I know, my mother hated her life, hated living with her parents. She met my father. My father is quite handsome fella. My mother is like average looking. And she had this obsession about him. She pushed really hard to get his attention. I don't know why my father actually ended up with her at all. Like, not entirely smart. My mother's not entirely smart, not entirely, like I said, not pretty. But they get together, they have sex, and my mother gets pregnant with my sister. And they basically use that, I don't know if we call it an opportunity, but they use that to get away from their parents, right? So I don't know how it was, but they left their homes and they went to, I don't know, live in a dingy apartment somewhere. My father got like an odd job and they disappeared, right, from the radar. And the only person that I was actively looking for them was my grandfather from my mother's side. He starts looking for them, and he finds my father and kind of convinces him to have a talk, right? To reunite both families, both of their parents, and talk about, you know, what's going on and what a solution can be, right? Because my grandfather didn't like that my mother was, you know, out there in the world, pregnant at 17 years old, right? So they convince my parents to come back. They get an apartment in one of my grandfather's properties. And well, my sister's pregnant, is born, and basically it was a shithole. My father is a really violent person, an irate guy, really loud. He dealt with alcoholism and smoking. He used to beat us. I don't know if he used implements or anything like that, but I believe it. I mean, I don't know. I don't remember anything about it, but I can believe it. My mother didn't do anything, right, to protect us. I was born 5 years later, so my sister is 5 years older than me. And they separated when I was five, so that was 5 years that I lived in there. I don't know what changed, you know, what exactly what happened that made my mother decide to leave my father, but I suspect something changed. I don't, it wasn't that my father was beating us, like she didn't really seem to care about it. Maybe he started beating her, I don't know. But that's where my real memories start, right? Like other things that I know about that time is that what really took care of me when I was a baby was my grandmother from my father's side. And I was also put into daycare really early. So I was like really chaotic environment, right? I was sometimes with my grandmother, sometimes with strangers, sometimes with my mother. Then they separated and we went back to where my mother was born, well, where she grew up, right? The place she wanted to escape the most, like we came back to that place. And it was pretty dangerous. Like, I believe, I understand why she left that place. It was terrible. My grandfather, it's an alcoholic. It's a, not a really great father figure. He's really, he was emasculated by his wife all the time. His wife was always yelling at him. My uncle, which is my mother's brother, did like heavy drugs. Like, I remember growing up, we could not get like nice things in the house because when we were, I was in school or something, my things could disappear, when I went back. So we had to hide our money and our my video games and all stuff, all that stuff in, like weird places. So it was pretty shitty growing up. My mother at the beginning didn't beat me. She was like the type of mother that just hugs you and tells you everything's going to be fine, right? Like a really passive person, still to this day. But the more economic problems she was facing at the time, she started like not being so patient with me. And the excuse is that I was a really grumpy kid, like that was like unruly. Like I didn't like the food that I was served or, I didn't like going to church or something. So she started screaming at me. Then she beat me sometimes with implements, with belts. I remember one time that she kicked me. She never kicked me before, but I remember that I was like really annoyed at something. I was screaming, and then she like chambered the kick or whatever it's called. And by the time she's like about to kick me, I was turning away from her, and I just turned to her, and she ended up kicking me in my testicles, which it sucked.
Very bad. Yeah, very bad.
Yeah, like, I remember being like, I could not believe that she didn't give a shit, because I told her it really hurts. It really, really, really hurts, and she didn't care. She was like, "Well, it's your fault." So, I hated my mother after that. No,
sorry. How old were you?
At the time, I was like eight. Like eight, yeah. And I was just waiting, man. I was just waiting for. I mean, she's short. She's quite a short person. So I was just waiting for me a little bit taller than her. I remember thinking, man, if she ever tries to lay a hand on me again, well, I'm just going to not let her anymore, right? But that, of course, never happened. Like,
you mean she didn't hit you again in that way?
Yeah, after I was taller than her, she didn't hit me again.
Oh, she did. Okay. Oh, like you were never able to fight back in the way that you wanted. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry about all of this. Very sad. Very sad. And this is why you don't hit kids, because, again, when violence comes in, you never know. You could accidentally hit them in the testicles, or, they could flinch back and fall down the stairs. Like, there's all kinds of terrible stuff that can go on once you start using violence. So I'm really sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Aside from that, well, I didn't really see my father much growing up after they separated. He got another family. And he saw some weekends and birthdays and whatnot. And my experience with him, it was okay. Actually, I prefer to be with my father. most of the time because, you know, he actually stopped hitting me when they separated. So, like, it was better. Like, I didn't have to deal with my mother. I didn't have to deal with my crazy grandparents. I could just go to the movies with my dad and or go to his job. And, you know, it was pretty cool. Although I kind of quickly realized that he was insane. And every time I meet some relative, they always ask if I'm like my father. You know, like, are you like your father? And everyone has a really, I don't know, everyone knows that he's kind of crazy.
Well, crazy, yeah.
But yeah, well, I remember, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I think we went to the movies. We were in the parking lot, like leaving after the movie. And back in the day, it was like you needed to pay after leaving the parking lot for the fee of the parking lot, whatever it's called. And there was a lady, and like an old lady before us. She was leaving, but she took, I don't know, she took like a long time to sort the payment. And my father just, I remember him, he lowered his window, he started screaming at her, like, you old bitch, like, hurry up, and, you know, all this really crazy stuff. And I was like, wow, my dad's crazy. Like, she really is insane.
Well, crazy, like, you mean that's just kind of evil, isn't it, to be, you know, screaming at someone, you know, let's say they're being slow or whatever. I mean, you don't get to scream at them.
Yeah, but like, he was, or like before that, he was all right. Like, we were talking, we were like, no, it was kind of nice. And then he suddenly became like this, like, I don't know, monster or whatever. Like, really evil, like you say, evil guy.
You just had a little giggle there, right?
Yes.
Why do you think? What is the, what is the culture you're from?
And what? Sorry?
Yeah, your cultural background.
I didn't get that.
What is your cultural background?
I'm Hispanic.
Yeah, right. No, I got that. But from where?
North America.
Okay. Cultural background. Where are your people from? Where are your parents from?
Want the exact country?
I think that's okay. Yeah, I don't think that's doxing you, okay, to find out where your parents were from.
Mexico.
Okay, so in Mexico, being loco, being crazy, can be kind of cool and funny, right?
Yeah.
Is that where you think the laughter may be coming from?
No. Like, I'm not using the literal loco translation to describe my father. I'm using more like unhinged. You know, like I don't, like I said, I don't have memories when he was beating us or screaming, but I only have the memories when he was nice and then suddenly he was acting all violent. Not towards me, but towards other people. That's why I said crazy.
All right. And how old were you when he was screaming at the woman who was trying to do the
parking? This time I was 9 years old.
Okay, got it. All right. And what did your father do for a living?
What was it called? He worked on restaurants, like a manager.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, restaurant managers are often kind of hot-tempered, right? I've worked for a few in my time. Yeah. Okay. All right. And did your mom stay home?
No. She was a secretary.
So who raised you when you were younger?
Like I said, I was probably my grandmother from my father's side.
And what was she like?
Well, she has this image of being this, she's dead now, but she had this image of being this sweet lady that couldn't hurt a fly, but she was pretty, she screamed at her kids and used like really coarse language towards them and towards his husband. I don't know, it was kind of weird. You know, it's like pretending to be good, but not really being.
Right.
But yeah, for the most part, I was all right with her. I was not scared of her or anything like my mother. I was scared of my mother. But yeah, she was not the greatest.
Okay. And what have you been doing since you, I guess, the dozen years or so that you've been an adult?
So I was living with my mother until 2 years ago that I decided to move away. We were sharing the, what's it called, the rent. After a really bad relationship, I decided to, after a really bad relationship with one of my girlfriends, my last girlfriend, I was like, yeah, I don't think I can live with my mother anymore. And she was of no help in that relationship. Like, I think she was actively sabotaging me.
Sure. Sure. Okay. And why were you living with your mother for the last 12 years?
Right. Because she took care of, I don't know, I see it as I was prolonging my childhood in a sense. Like she take care of the food, she take care of, you know, half the rent. There was times I was not working, I could just be playing video games all day.
Oh, so it was easier?
Yeah, it was easier.
Okay. All right. And so you had your mom continue to take care of you because it was easier than getting a job.
Yes.
Okay. And so if you do what is easy, what's the problem?
What's the problem with easy?
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with easy? I mean, there's benefits to it, right?
Yeah, but I hated living with her.
No, you lived with her, so you kind of hated it.
But it was not pleasant. What?
No, but you sorry to be annoying, but you preferred that.
Yes, you're right. I prefer that to actually getting a job and living by myself. And
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, I'm trying to understand what the problem is here. So, it was easier and more enjoyable for you to live with your mother and have her pay the bills so you could play video games or do whatever you wanted, right?
Yes.
So, help me understand what the problem is. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just like,
I understand. You knew
that living with your mother was negative. You knew that it was your childhood was continuing and you were being, I mean, have you worked much?
Not really.
Okay, so you had your mom pay the bills and you got to hang around and play video games and you didn't have to get a job and, right? I mean, that's what you wanted to do, right?
Yes.
So, again, I'm sort of trying to understand what's the problem.
I don't know how can I be actually happy doing that.
I mean, 12 years is a long time. That's not an accidental mistake, right?
No.
So you haven't worked. You're 30. You've dated some, but I assume you can't get a quality woman, right?
Right.
Because you're living at home with mom, right?
Well, I was living with home, with my mom, yes.
You're not anymore?
No, I did food 2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay. So sorry, for 10 years, you lived with your mom, right? Yeah. Okay. And so you moved out. Tell me about why you moved out or what happened there?
Well, I remember I hated my job at the time. I just came out of a really horrible relationship. And and the relationship with my mother started being really, I don't know, she started worrying about money a lot and told me about that I needed to get a job again because I left my job. I was like 2 years unemployed, 2 years, 2 months unemployed. And then like things were like dicey. And she was like telling me constantly that I needed to get another job. I got another job, but I hated it. And also, in that relationship that I had, my mother was not of any help. Annoyingly, so she was... It's like when you see someone fall and maybe you can grab them so they don't hit their head and die, but they just look at them and do nothing.
Right. And sorry, do you still have a relationship with your father?
No.
And what happened with that? Really, I'm sorry to hear that, but what happened with that?
Yeah, thank you. So when he started his second family, he kept seeing us on weekends. But I think he started like entering some problems with my stepmother at the time, and just he stopped coming. You know, like he stopped coming to see us. So I just stopped seeing him altogether. And when I was probably 15 years old, I called him and told him, I really need you. I need a dad in my life, and you're my dad, in a sense. And I'm sorry for the giggling. And he was like, yes, I would love that. And, you know, we can talk and whatnot. And I remember we sent messages to each other for like, 2 weeks. And then he just stopped. And I kind of realized that I was never going to get a real relationship with him. Then he entered his his second marriage with another woman. And he didn't even invite me to his wedding. So I was like, yeah, this is not going to happen. The last time I saw him was on Christmas Day.
Last year?
Last year.
Okay.
He's a really distant guy. Like, he claims to love me and all of this, but no, I don't know how that can be love. Like, he was not there. He never gave me any useful advice. I mean, the only advice or kind of advice he gave me is stay in school, kid.
Right.
Because life's a bitch.
Right, right. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you.
And did he get remarried or did he have other relationships?
Yeah, he remarried. And he had a thing with cheating on his partners. So I don't know if that's still going on. But yeah, apparently he's always in and out of this marriage, the current marriage.
And did he get less crazy?
I'm not sure. I hope so.
Okay. All right. So what's the best thing that I could do to help you in the time that we had? Appreciate that background. I'm really sorry for all of this. And what's the best thing that I can do?
Yes. I feel like right now I don't have anyone in my life to help, to watch my back, to maybe, help me figure things out. Like, I used to go to church and I talk about these issues with the people there, but the responses were like, it will be all right, like, just let time do its thing. It will get sorted out, I can remember getting that response many times. I was just going crazy, like actually literally crazy. There's no one right now in my life that I can really share these things. So I don't know, maybe you could have a look from the outside, right? To let me understand what's kind of going on, like something I'm missing.
Sorry, you want someone in your life who's going to do what? I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure I understand.
Maybe look at contradictions, I want these big things from my life, but I'm not doing anything to accomplish them. So,
sorry, but why would somebody want to do that for you? I mean, they wouldn't get paid, right?
No.
So why would someone want to do that for you? I'm sorry if I'm missing something, and please forgive me if I'm being obtuse or not understanding something, but why would somebody make it their job to fix your life when you're 30?
Right.
I mean, are you fixing other people's lives? I mean, I'm sure you know people who are worse off than you. Are you fixing their... Like, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm genuinely trying to understand, like, why would somebody make it their job to fix your life? I mean, are you making it your job to fix other people's lives?
Well, whenever I can, I give advice. I try to...
I mean, there are homeless people around who are worse off than you. Are you taking them in and fixing their lives?
No.
Okay, what about people who are more mentally unstable than you or, have more problems or don't know anything about childhood or philosophy or self-knowledge or anything? Are you helping them?
No.
So why would you want something from others for free that you're not providing to other people?
Well, I don't know. Like, just,
no, but it's an important question, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Pretend that I'm someone that you want me to fix your life. Okay. So make the case for that. And maybe there's a good case. I'm open to hearing it. So make the case if you could and say why I should spend, hundreds of hours trying to help you fix your life.
Well, I don't know how He's giving advice, trying to fix someone's life.
Well, it takes, I mean, you've listened to me for 5 years and obviously you've made some real progress and I think that's great. But okay, so let's just say, why should somebody want to spend, you know, dozens or hundreds of hours giving you advice? What would be in it for them?
Well, if I'm not giving anything back, then nothing.
Well, but that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
So help me. Again, help me understand.
I want to say I don't know, but probably I know.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with wanting things in life. It's great to want things. So for instance, I want people to donate money to me, right? I mean, I don't just want that, but I definitely, you know, I've got bills and, you know, I, like everyone else, needs to live on this planet. And so I want people to give me money, right? To donate money to me, right? Now, of course, I think most people would be pretty happy if other people just gave them money, right? Like if you woke up tomorrow and a distant relative you didn't even know about gave you $10,000, right? You'd be happy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's good. That makes sense. So we want people to transfer resources to us, right? To give us stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the sort of starting point of human interaction and survival and trade. So there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm not criticizing that. But other people are like you. They also want stuff, right? So I want people to give me resources or to transfer resources to me. It's not like a gift or something like that, right? But other people also want me to transfer resources or value to them. So I want people to give value to me, donations, support, whatever it is, right? And other people want me to transfer value to them. So of course I do this exchange, right? So I'm not charging you for my time and expertise in this call, which is fine. But the goal, of course, is to put the show out to donors so that other people will find value in what we're doing, in the conversation that we're having. And, you know, hopefully, of course, at some point, they will donate to what it is that I do. So I provide value, and so other people will provide value to me back. I'm sorry to be so basic, but obviously that's the general idea, right? Now, you want me to help you, which is fine. I mean, but I have an exchange in that I wouldn't just do this for free, right? I mean, I'm doing it for you for free, but that's with the idea of having the conversation published so that other people can find value in it and they will pay for my time through donating to freedomain.com/donate. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So you want people to watch your back, to give you advice, to help you out. And that's great. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. What are you providing?
Well, the same.
Okay. So in what way would you have credibility to give people advice if your life is a mess? Because you're calling me, if I understand this correctly, because you experience your life as a mess, right?
Yes.
So, unless people want advice on how to make their lives a mess, which they don't, generally, what would you provide in return?
Well, you know, you need someone to move things out. I guess you can call me.
Oh, if I'm moving.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's called the coincidence of wants, right? I mean, people don't generally need a bunch of stuff moved, right? And if they do, that's very low value compared to the life skill, which is high value, of helping people to fix their lives, right? That's tricky and high value and all of that kind of stuff, right?
You're right. So I don't have much value to give people.
Well, I'm not saying that. I don't know. But what I am saying is that it's very easy in the world, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's very easy in the world to say, here's what I want. And not that I'm saying that you're a child, but that's what children do. I mean, that's what you did as a child. It's what I did as a child. right? As we said, I want, right?
Yes.
I want some candy. I want cuddles. I want you to read me a bedtime story, right? I want some breakfast. I want you to play with me, or whatever, right? That's what we say. And of course, we don't really think what our parents want. I mean, babies obviously don't sit there at night and say, well, you know, mom's already been up twice tonight. I shouldn't wake her up, right? Babies only focus on what the baby wants, right? Which is, I'm hungry, I'm going to cry until I get food, right? And nothing wrong with that either. But you're 30 years old. So saying what you want is fine, but, you know, one of the lines between adulthood and childhood is to say not what I want, but what could be said instead?
What I can provide for people.
Yeah, what can we exchange?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
But I think I have the potential.
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying I'm not sure that that's part of your thinking as yet.
Oh.
And I mean, of course, your parents sound like pretty selfish people, so it wouldn't be surprising if you thought about what you wanted rather than what you have to offer. I mean, most people would like a job where they got paid $1,000 an hour to scroll social media and watch funny videos, right?
Yeah.
But the question is not what do I want, but what can I exchange? If you want value, you have to provide value, right? I mean, of course, again, I'm sorry to be talking so basic. You know all of this stuff. I'm just trying to make it part of your more conscious thinking, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, like, reading so my, what my
do
message.
You, hang on. So when you say that your life is a mess, that you're not getting anywhere, usually, and I say this with great sympathy, usually it's because you're thinking about what you want rather than what you can provide. So with that in mind, tell me a little bit about what happened with your last girlfriend. You said it was pretty bad, right?
Yeah. Well, I entered a relationship with a woman that was sexually abused as a kid multiple times. And right away, I could tell, even if I didn't know her, but I could tell there was something wrong with her.
So, sorry, tell me a little bit about when you met and what happened and how you found
Oh, yeah, sorry,
out.
I was taking a...
No, that was my bad communication. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yes. So, I was taking like a IT course, it's called a course, and we got invited to a volleyball tourney. So I entered the tourney and I met her there. And she was, I think she saw me and she talked to me. I could tell right away that she was interested in me. But like I said, she had like many red flags, even from the beginning.
Well, like what?
Well, she wore a mask all the time. Like this was after COVID, but she was still wearing a mask. And you know, there's people like that out there, but I realized that it was something, didn't have to do with germs or anything like that. I invited her to a date and she didn't really want to take the mask off until, well, we had to eat, and then she took it off and like her demeanor changed completely. Like, I don't know, she didn't want me to see me, you know. She was like hiding her face and all. Now having this weird behavior. And well, that was one. The other one was that she was like really, sexual. I don't know how to describe it. Like she grind herself against me when I barely knew her. Like I asked her into to a date, and then she was like doing all this sexual stuff. And also, like nobody liked her in her. She was taking like a, I don't know, call it a course. I don't know if it's called a course, but she was taking some classes, and apparently she was really unpopular there. But I still went with it, you know. Still, I don't know. I had this idea that I could help her.
Okay, so she was maybe a bit of a hypochondriac, hypersexual. People didn't like her, and so on. Okay, and tell me what you liked about all of that.
What I liked about it, Well, she was definitely offering sex right away. And I like that for the most part. The other thing is I kind of saw it as an opportunity to do good, right? Like, quote unquote, good. To help her to make her life a little bit better. To make her laugh, to be great company. At least at the beginning. Then later when the relationship went to shit, it's like, I just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, so tell me what happened over the course of the relationship.
Okay, so she... Oh, man. So I found a lot
of things just at the beginning,
past.
My apologies to interrupting right away, but tell me how long was it before you had sex?
Like a month.
Okay.
So I found about her previous relationships. She told me about one, and it was pretty crazy. So she's Christian, but she had this... I'm not trolling, by the way. She had this like lesbian long-distance relationship before she met me.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
And she also had like, I don't know, call it prostitution. One member of her church basically gave her money to have sex with him. And she regularly had sex with him. And he gave him her money.
And when did you find that out?
That was like 4 months into the relationship.
Right. Sorry, you found that out 4 months in. Okay, got it.
Yeah. At the time I was visiting her family, she was, they're from another state. So we went to visit them, celebrate my birthday and whatnot. And I found out about all of this by looking at her phone.
Sorry, but she told you about the prostitution stuff?
Later, yeah. I found out about the guy, and then I pressed her about it, and then she basically told me everything. And yeah, that was the moment I was like, I really need to get out of this relationship.
Okay. And sorry, how long ago did you meet her?
How long ago?
Yeah.
Like, 2 years and a half.
Okay, so you'd already been listening to what I do for 2.5 years or so, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you think about calling me before getting involved in this relationship? I mean, you knew about the call-in shows, right?
Yes.
So did you think about that?
No, I didn't think about that. I started listening to related call-in shows, you know, like, I don't know, something like Crazy Girlfriend or something like that. But no, I didn't really apply anything.
Okay.
I guess it was inconvenient to me.
Go on.
Yeah, I think it was inconvenient to apply philosophy or even talk to you at the moment. Because I was like, I don't know, like she offered sex and I guess I wanted sex. And I wanted kind of like the illusion.
Yeah,
that
like
I was
in the same way that
good.
Your mother offers you a free place to live. So you'll take that too, right?
Right. And I'm willing to do that even if there's downsides.
So, I mean, it's kind of hedonistic, right? And I'm not saying this is a big criticism. It just seems that way to me that you live for short-term pleasures.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yes. Yeah, I spend my time, you know, playing video games, like watching YouTube videos, like things that are, I don't know, like pleasure in the moment at the cost of my future, at the cost of, you know, important things that I could do.
Right.
Like I don't have much time to waste, but I'm still wasting it because it's immediate pleasure.
So, sorry, your answer as to why you take a hedonistic approach is because you're an idiot. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to understand. I think that's what you said, isn't it?
No, sir. That was kind of funny. No, I'm not an idiot.
Well, I mean, that's the explanation you gave, right? And again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just trying to follow your thinking, right? So if you say, well, the reason I don't run marathons is because I'm in a wheelchair, right? Then, okay. But philosophy can't fix that, right? Right. And if you say, well, the reason I'm a hedonist is because I'm an idiot, well, philosophy can't fix that, right? Philosophy can't make you not an idiot, so to speak.
Right.
So why are you a hedonist?
Well, that's what I would like to know. I'm a hedonist. I agree with you. I'm a hedonist. I mean, the way I've been living my life is definitely hedonistic. And it's a, it,
yeah, and hedonists exploit people. Okay. Right. So you took this very damaged woman and you had sex with her because it made you feel good.
Yes.
But it was bad for her, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, what did you admire about her?
Nothing.
Did you tell her you left her?
Yeah.
Did you love her?
No, I mean.
So you took a victim of severe childhood sexual abuse and you lied to her so you could get sex from her?
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Well, yeah, I fucked it up. I really, really messed her up. And she didn't deserve that. I mean, she already been through horrible stuff. And I just.
Well, she already was sexually exploited as a child, right?
Yes.
Right. And then you lied to her and told her you loved her when you didn't love her so that you could get sex from her. I mean, I don't know how that makes you feel. And listen, I want to be fair and realistic. Most men have done things in the past they're not super proud of. So I'm not trying to say you're some uniquely bad guy or something like that, but I'm just curious what your experience is of what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't feel good about it. I don't know. Like I fucked her life up, literally. Like I think she needed a friend, not a whatever I was, not an exploiter.
Well, it's exploitive to take a damaged person, to lie to them, and to continue to exploit them sexually because of their sexual wounds from the past, or sexualized wounds from the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you talked about the relationship earlier, my impression was that you were upset with her.
Sorry, I didn't get that.
Well, you complained about her, right? It was a bad relationship. Right. It was, you know, it was terrible and all of that, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what would be the most honest thing that you could say rather than complaining about the relationship or her?
Well, the most honest will be enter a relationship with a damaged girl to have sex because I wanted it and I didn't care about messing her up.
Well, you defrauded her.
Right? I what?
Sorry? You defrauded her because you said that you loved her when you didn't love her.
Yeah.
And she's kind of defenseless because of her past, right? I mean, she's obviously, or at least seems to me, she's quite disturbed and doesn't have people looking out for her and doesn't have anyone who's going to give her good advice, right?
Right.
Right. So if she'd had, like, you want people in your life to give you good advice. If she had people in her life giving her good advice, would she have dated you?
No.
Right. So you want people to give you good advice, but you also want to exploit people who don't get good advice, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense.
Okay. And again, I'm obviously being fairly blunt here, and I say this again with some sympathy because you were raised badly, but you know, you're 30 years old, so you kind of have to see things for what they are, right?
Yes, I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. And how long did the relationship last?
8 months.
Okay. Got it. And how did it end?
Well, so I learned about all of this. She tells me it's in the past, you know, like she's going to block these people and we can move forward, whatever. So we came back from the vacation and things started going really weird. She started to not want to be around me anymore that much. And I was suspecting that she was probably talking to these people again. And so one day she's like, please don't come to my house. Like I regularly went to her house. But these days she was like, no, don't come. I was like, all right. But then, I grew anxious. So I was like, go to her home, She opens the door in OneNote, and I just take her phone, start reading the messages. And she was still talking to them, and apparently she was planning to meet this guy again. So I kind of, I blew up.
And sorry, this was the guy from the church?
Yes. Yes.
The guy who paid her. Okay.
So I blow up, and then I call her mother, and I basically tell her everything. So her mother, I think she was at her work. She comes home right away. She starts confronting us, I guess, about everything.
Sorry, you told her mother that she was seeing the man who'd paid her for sex?
At first, I told her that she was talking to her ex-girlfriend.
Sorry, why would you tell her mom this stuff?
So I was angry.
Well, okay, I mean, you're angry, I get that, but what was your purpose in telling her mother this stuff?
Okay. I guess I wanted her mom to scold my girlfriend.
Okay, now, did your mother know about the lesbian relationship?
Yes.
And did her mother know that this man had paid her daughter for sex?
No.
And did you tell the mother about the man who paid her daughter for sex?
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Okay, so you were really trying to destroy her life.
Right.
I mean, that's really nasty. I mean, you were revealing this woman's deepest, darkest secrets, right?
Right.
I don't have any sense of what you think about this stuff morally.
Well, I never thought about it that way.
Don't, I mean, lie. I knew, don't I, lie. I knew. Don't lie to me, bro. Don't do nasty things like tell a woman's deepest, darkest secrets to her immediate family and then say, well, I never thought of it in a negative way. I never thought there was anything wrong with it. I mean, come on. If we're going to have a conversation, you got to be honest, right?
Right.
You wanted to do damage. You wanted to hurt her and harm her closest relationships by telling her mother she had taken money for sex.
Yes.
Okay. So then don't say, like, when I say that's kind of nasty, you say, well, I've never really thought of it in that way. It's like, that was the whole point, right? Was to do as much damage as you could, unless I misunderstand something completely.
No, you're right, because after that, I left her.
Sure.
So it's like, how much damage I can do before I...
I'm sorry, say that again?
How much damage I can do...
Sure.
Before, you know, after, oh, before I've leaving her, you know.
Right.
Basically ruined her life and then leaving.
Right. Right. Okay.
Right.
So, what do you think about that?
Well, that's monstrous. That's really fucked up.
Kinda is, right? Now, I get that she's not an angel, she's not perfect, she's an adult. I get all of that, right? And she was lying to you, as far as I understand it. Because she was saying that she wasn't in touch with these people, but she was. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. So I get that she's not an angel and she was lying and so on. So I'm not trying to whitewash all of that, but I'm talking to you and not to her, right? So people will do stuff in this life that upsets us, right? Makes us mad, makes us sad, whatever, right? Do we then get to try to destroy their lives?
No.
I mean, well, but for you, yes, right? For you, yes, that is definitely on the table, right? That's the thing that you can do, that you will do, that you're willing to do, that they're not just willing to do, but you do it, right?
Right.
Okay. And it didn't strike you until today that there was anything wrong with what you did, if I understand things correctly.
Oh, you're right. I knew.
You knew that what you were doing was wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew because her family was really volatile.
Ah, so you were trying to destroy her relationship with her family, is that right?
She didn't have a relationship with her family, but I don't know, I wanted to create chaos.
Well, yeah, you were lighting you were putting gasoline on a fire, hitting the match, and then walking away, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Why was that the answer for you?
Why was that the answer? Well,
okay, let's go back a little bit further. So when did things start to go badly in the relationship over the 8 months?
I will say after we had sex, she started like being really jealous of people around her, around me, like woman around me. Like she started asking where I was all the time, and if I ever interacted with a woman, she was like, "Did you like her?" or something like that. Like she had like this overly, jealousy type of stuff going on. I didn't like that, obviously. And
okay, so hang on. So after, did you tell her that you loved her before you had sex?
Oh, I don't remember. Let me think.
I mean, you must have shown some, I assume, some significant. She didn't just jump into bed with you right away because you waited a month, right? Which is not a long time, but it's also not a super short time. I mean, obviously, I've talked to people who've had relationships within the first date or two dates or whatever, right? So you must have expressed some significant affection towards her in the first month, I assume.
Well, actually, at the beginning, I told her I didn't want to have sex because I had this idea that I was going to wait until marriage. And she was like, all right. And then she started making, every time we kiss or something, she started making advances and maybe touching me.
And sorry, was it true that you didn't want to have sex? Sorry, I thought you got together with her because you wanted to have sex. And now you're saying that you didn't want to have sex. And it's not your fault. I may have misunderstood something.
Well, I think maybe unconsciously, I wanted to have sex with her, even though I told her that I didn't want to have sex with her, because in the first date, she was already like overly sexual. Like I knew, in a sense, I knew what she was offering.
And sorry, were you a virgin when you were dating her?
Yes.
Okay. So you said that you wanted to wait until marriage, but she was very sexual. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And then how did you go from not wanting to have sex to having sex?
Well, I couldn't resist it. Probably I could resist. I don't know. Like she was making advances. So one day I was like, I guess, horny or something. Like I had been out of porn for a while and masturbation. So I guess that day I was really horny. So I accepted. And I don't think I said I was in love with her before that.
Okay. And I'm sorry, because this does change the equation a little bit. Was she more sexually experienced than you?
Yeah.
Okay. And is she older than you?
Yeah.
And how old was she when you met? You were 27 or 28?
27. She was 29.
She was 29. Okay. And she knew that you were a virgin?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that does change the equation a little bit, of course, because she had more sexual experience. Did you ever get her body count?
Yeah. 6.
Okay. Got it. All right. So she kept throwing herself at you sexually. And then you held out for a month, which is pretty good for a virgin. And then you had sex.
Right. I mean, I remember feeling guilty about it. Like, we had sex and then after it, I was like, I shouldn't have done that or this is wrong.
And was it wrong for religious reasons or other reasons?
Yeah, at the time I was going to church and all of that. But also, I know it was kind of stupid, If I really want a good family and a real relationship with a woman, that you just wait. So I was kind of chewing everything.
Well, was she sexy for you?
Yes.
Right. Now, of course, you're a Christian, is that right? No, but at the time. Sorry, I was unclear. At the time?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in Christianity, are you supposed to be in hypersexual situations for a month straight when you are in your late 20s?
No, you're supposed to marry really early.
Yeah, you're supposed to marry really early, and if you're on dates, you're supposed to be in public and chaperoned, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the reason for that is what?
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, just, as a woman, you're supposed to just be a virgin until you get married.
No, no, but why is it that young people are supposed to have chaperones or date in a public place? You know, there's an old rule, like you've got to keep your dorm room open, you've got to keep one foot on the floor or something like that, right? Why is it that young people are supposed to date in a chaperoned or not hypersexual way?
Because of the hormones.
Yeah, because if you are a young man and you are in a hypersexual situation for week after week, that it seems to me sooner or later, it's kind of inevitable that you're going to end up failing temptation.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. Now, and of course, you know, as a Christian, that you should not be putting yourself in hypersexual situations week after week, because sooner or later, isn't it going to be the case that you're going to lose the fight, so to speak?
Right.
Okay, got it. Got it. All right. And so, when did you first begin to suspect that she was talking to her ex-girlfriend and the guy who paid her?
Don't remember. Like, she was really, you know, like, guarding her phone all the time after, I guess, 4 months to their relationship. Like, she always had it with her. She was, like, keeping it really close to her of all times. So I was, like, curious about that. And I was thinking, maybe she's, you know, she had a long-distance relationship. She probably can do it again whenever we are not together.
Okay. And do you know why she became more jealous? Was she a Latina woman?
Yes.
Okay, so the pattern of Latina women being hypersexual and then getting crazy jealous is not unknown, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a cliche, right?
Yeah.
Fiery Latina who wants to know everywhere you are and so on, right? Okay, so do you know why she became more possessive and jealous after you had sex?
I don't know, maybe she was projecting.
Well, I'm not sure.
Like
that
she was cheating.
The word projecting doesn't really, I mean, because she was maybe cheating as well?
Yeah.
It could be, but I would imagine, I mean, obviously you could be right, and you know much better than I do, but I think one other possibility is that because you didn't really like or admire her, after you have sex, she's concerned that you're kind of done with her or only with her because of the sex. If that, I mean, that's kind of the price you pay for having sex with a woman that you don't really admire, is that you are going to end up, or she's going to end up feeling kind of paranoid and jumpy that you're not with her for the right reasons. Because, I mean, it's kind of true. You really aren't there for the right reasons, right?
Right.
Right. So she's going to feel insecure after she has sex with you because you've mostly stuck around because of the sexual access. And then after you get the sexual access, she's concerned that you're not going to stick around because you've already gotten what you want. So it seems quite likely that she would end up jumpy that way.
Well, if she's doing sexual advances, I don't get it.
I'm sorry?
Like, she's doing sexual advances and then I have sex with her and then she starts getting nervous about me leaving her?
Sure. Sure. Like,
but she's the
Let me ask you this. So, if someone comes along to you and says, hey, man, give me your life savings and I'll double your money, and you think maybe it's a scam, but you decide to trust him, after he takes your money, how are you going to feel?
Anxious.
Yeah, and you're going to want to keep track of him and you want to know where he is, and suddenly you're worried he's going to run off with your money, right?
Yeah, but in this case, she wanted to have sex with me, right?
No, I get that. And you want to give your money to the con man, but after the guy takes your money and he's hard to get a hold of or something, you're going to get kind of jumpy, right?
Okay. Yeah, right.
So she wanted to offer up sex because she doesn't feel like she has much to offer as a person, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah.
And she kind of doesn't, because she's got a lot of trauma and she's lies and so on, right? So then after she gives you sex, she then is concerned that you're going to have post-nut clarity. Isn't that what they call it these days? And you're going to be like, Oh, this was a bad idea. This was the wrong thing to do. I feel terrible, right? Or something like that. And you did feel that, right?
Yes.
So you have the sex, and then you feel like it's a bad or negative situation, right? So that's why she became, or I think that's most likely why she became possessive and jumpy and wanted to know where you were and what you were doing and all that kind of stuff, right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, so you have sex in the first month, but you continue to go out for 7 months after that, right?
Right.
And then at some point you realize, oh, she's hiding her phone, she's doing this, she's doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you become more distant, is that right? Or things aren't working out particularly well or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then things descend and you start playing cat and mouse with her phone, and then you find out some months later that she is in fact talking to her ex and the guy who paid her.
Right.
Okay. And then you get angry and you try to blow up her life, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And how long ago did you guys break up?
2 years.
2 years.
Maybe a little bit more than 2 years, yeah.
And what other relationships have you had, if any?
None.
Okay. All right. So, again, I just want to make sure I understand. I appreciate that backstory, and I think it's quite illuminating. And again, what can I do that will help you the most in the time that we have left?
Well,
and I'm sorry, you were, if you broke up 2 years ago, you went out, yeah, 27 and change. Sorry. Okay. All right. So, how can I best, what would be the best outcome for you from this call?
Well, you already have made me realize I really have a big problem with hedonism.
And hedonism arises out of despair. So, for instance, if you were in a currency, well, I mean, it's kind of all currencies, but if you were in a currency which was losing a lot of value every day, then you would go out and you would spend that money as quickly as possible, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise you end up with like nothing, right? Like one of my mom's, I think it was my grandfather, saved his whole life and then took out all of his money and was able to buy a slice of pie and a coffee because the inflation was so bad in Germany, of course, the hyperinflation in the 1920s. No, is that right? She was 137. Yeah, maybe it's just my great-grandfather or her grandfather or something like that. But yeah, so if your money is losing value, in other words, if you don't have any hope for the future in terms of your money keeping value, then you're going to spend it as quickly as possible, because if you don't spend it, it's going to turn to nothing in your hands, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't have a strong sense of the future and your ability to affect or control things in the future, then you will end up usually as a hedonist. I mean, why save if the money's just going to turn to nothing? Or I don't know if you've ever had a bunch of food that's going to go off, then you have a bunch of friends or family over and you have a big meal because you might as well, like you're either going to throw it out or you're going to consume it, right? But you can't keep it. And so that tends to be where hedonism comes from, is despair about the future. So if that's true, then what are your thoughts about the future? Like throughout your 20s, right? You obviously had thoughts about the future and you decided that you didn't want to defer gratification for the future. So what do you think about the future as a whole?
Well, I don't think I have much of a future.
Right. Okay. And why do you think that is?
Because I keep wasting time. I don't know, like every single thing I do in my life is just for the here and now. It's like, I'm not meeting people. I'm not in therapy. I'm not looking to have a career. Well, I'm not doing anything to have a career. Like, I'm in close danger to just be a loser for the rest of my life.
Well, but that's the result of you not thinking you have a future, right? The question is, why don't you think you have a future? Like, acting as if you don't have a future. You know, if you were to say to me, look, I'm not going to save for my old age. And I say, why? I say, well, he said, all my family, they die before they're 50. Everyone in my family dies before they're 50, and I have those genes or whatever it is, right? I say, okay, well, that makes sense then, right? So why don't you think you have a future? That's the big question. Because if you don't have a future, or if you don't believe you have a future, then you won't defer gratification and you'll kind of live the way you've been living, right?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, do I have a future? Can I still do something?
Sorry.
To fix my life?
Maybe you could repeat my question back to me, because I'm not sure we're on the same page here. What was my question?
Why? I don't think I have a future.
Good. Okay. So why don't you think you have a future, do you think?
I'm not sure.
Well, I know you're not sure, but why do you think?
Sorry. Nothing comes to my mind. Like, I don't think I have a future.
Because if you didn't have a future, hedonism kind of makes sense, right? I mean, how many people, if they have a last meal, like they're going to be executed, how many people are like, ooh, well, I don't want to have too many calories? I mean, it's your last meal, no one. Right? You might as well go all out, right?
Right.
So, why don't you think you have a future?
I mean, I don't know anyone, aside from the free domain community, that changes their life to a positive.
Okay. So, you don't have any examples, if I understand this correctly, you don't have any examples of people who believe they have a future.
Yeah.
So everyone around you blows up, yells, has sex, makes up, breaks up, you know, eats too much, smokes, you know, and lives for the present.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a Hispanic thing too, right?
Right.
Hey, everything will work out fine. Just, you know, do your thing. And what is it they say at church? It's all going to work out. Hey, it's going to be fine. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were looking maybe at breaking out of that pit, that trap.
I really don't talk to my family.
This is the furnace you were forged in, right? So like a sword that is a scimitar was made in a forge. The forge was super hot. And then the forge, like the scimitar comes out and it's curved. And it's curved because it was bent while it was heated. And it says, well, I say, hey, you're a scimitar. And he says, well, I don't go back to the forge anymore. I don't have much to do with the forge anymore. It's like, yeah, but that's still where you were made. I got this clue from the first thing you said about your parents. You said your mother was very attractive, right?
My father.
Sorry, your father. Yeah, sorry, your father was very attractive. And so your mother was making decisions based on lust rather than virtues.
Right.
Right. And that's hedonism. So you were raised by a bunch of hedonists. And in general, hedonism tends to be associated with people who aren't quite as intelligent. Because it takes a certain amount of intelligence to recognize the costs of hedonism, right?
Yep.
And obviously you're intelligent, so you're seeing that cost, right?
Right, but it feels hopeless.
What feels hopeless?
Well, I'm getting all these insights, right, ever since I started listening to your calling shows. But how can I do that?
Sorry, how can you what?
How can I accomplish that? Like, I know it in theory, like how you get these things. But whenever I pursue them, I know it's like I'm hopeless. Like, no matter how much I can think I can get there, I will not get there.
Okay. All right. And there being where you can get great things in your life by not being a hedonist. In other words, saying, well, this woman is sexy and wants to have sex, but it's a bad idea because she's damaged and unstable.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And your parents have not said to you, you need to have more discipline and you need to be better at deferring gratification, right?
No.
Because your parents don't defer gratification, if I understand this correctly.
Yeah, they don't do it.
Okay.
I mean, nobody in my life does it. Yeah, nobody that I've known does it.
Okay. So if you could defer gratification, like tomorrow or today after this call, you defer gratification, if you could do that, then what would you do that would be different than what you're doing?
Well, the first thing is get therapy.
Okay.
Second is start honing my skills. You know, like to get a career, I actually need to have a plan to new entrepreneurship skills.
Yeah.
So we start reading and grinding the knowledge.
Okay.
I will start meeting people,
mm-hmm.
and trying to be helpful to them. You know, instead of trying to get things from them, just trying to be helpful and, you know, see where that leads me.
Okay. So when did you first start thinking about doing therapy?
After the breakup.
Okay. So 2 years ago. And why did you not do it?
Well, I did it, but only for a month.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, like recently also was in therapy for like a month again, but it was just, my therapist was kind of a hippie a little bit. And she talked a lot. Like, I could barely talk in those sessions. She was just talking and talking and talking. So yeah, I'm like, I'm going to find another person, but I haven't done it.
Okay. And why do you think you haven't done it?
It could be that I'm too attached to my life right now.
I mean, that's by definition, right? That's like saying, why don't you want to change? Because I'm attached to not changing. Okay, but that doesn't answer much, right?
Well, if I do it, I will have to actually change, right?
Well, I mean, that is the point, sure. But why don't you want to change? And the reason I'm asking you all of this is because let's say that I've written a diet book or a whole bunch of diet books, and you've read all my diet books, but you're still gaining weight after 5 years, then telling you about the diet isn't going to change anything. We have to figure out why you're not dieting.
Right. Well, it's not like my personal relationships are at stake if I do it, you know?
Oh, because like you've mostly broken from all the people from the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not that, so I don't know. I don't want to change. Yeah, I'm not sure. My mind is blank.
All right. Okay, so let's say that you get discipline. How's your health, exercise, weight, all that? How's that doing?
Okay, so my discipline is shaky. Like I go to the gym, but sometimes I just skip the gym. You know, I do like the basic chores around my house, but sometimes kind of stop doing it for maybe a week or 2 weeks. It's kind of like a roller coaster. It feels like I'm doing it and then I stop doing it. Something happens and then I start doing it. Same things with, for example, learning to write or to draw. You know, like I do it for a month and then I stop doing it for 2 months. So it's not really there. Like, it's in short bursts of time. You know, it's like, I feel like I can change. I feel like, like I have what I need to change, and I do it, and then I just follow.
Okay. And what would you like your life to look like in a year?
Well, I want to quit my job. So I want to do my own thing. So I will be mostly struggling, trying to make it out in the self-published world. I also would like to at least be dating and looking actively for a relationship, or in a, you know, like pretty deep into therapy. making progress. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay, and do you want to be a husband and a father?
Yes.
Okay. Why did you not date until you were 27?
I dated in high school. And after I dropped out of high school, I stopped dating altogether. I got depressed really bad.
Okay, go on.
And, you know, my hygiene started dropping off. It's like, I didn't do any exercise. I just stay in my room, playing video games. And whenever I had the urge, I just watch porn. Yeah, that was my adult life for the most part. After, you know, 18.
Okay. And nobody said anything to you about any of this, right?
No. I mean, my mother on occasion said like, hey, why don't you get a job? Why don't you, I don't know, go out or something? But it was rare. But yeah, my family didn't really care for the most part, like extended family and family. Like I could be rotting in my bedroom. And
right. And what about siblings?
Yeah, my sister also didn't say anything.
Okay. And what do you think the biggest barrier is?
The biggest barrier to what?
Well, to having the life that you want and all that kind of stuff.
Getting off my ass.
Yes, but again, that doesn't answer anything. What's the biggest barrier to getting off your ass?
Well, probably because I don't have any real challenges.
Well, what are you living on at the moment? You have a job, right?
Yeah, I have a job.
What are you living on?
What do you mean?
I mean, you're living on, is the job enough for your rent and your food and all of that? You're not getting any subsidies from the government or your parents or anything?
All right. No, I don't pay rent. Basically, I have inherited an apartment.
Oh,
from my
who?
Grandmother.
Oh, your grandmother. Okay, so you have a free apartment.
Grandmother from my father's side, yeah.
Okay. So you have a free apartment, and what else?
Well, that's it. I pay everything else.
And are you making low income?
Yes.
What's your hourly?
Oh, God. I'm not sure.
Well, okay, what's your monthly? Calculate. Or your weekly?
Okay. In Canadian?
Or US?
In US dollars? Let me check real quick. Okay. That is monthly, $553.
What? You're making $500 a month?
Yeah.
Come on, bro. What are you talking about? I mean, how many hours are you working?
8 hours a day. I'm sorry, it's kind of difficult.
No, you're not.
No? I'll just put them my monthly and I'll just, you know, convert it to US dollars.
Oh, you're not in America, is that right?
Yeah, I'm not in America.
Okay. So you make $550 a month divided by, let's see, okay, let me do this. So let's say 37.5 times 4 weeks in a month is 150. So you're making $500, let's say 550 divided by 550 divided by 150. Are you telling me that you're making $3.60 an hour?
Probably.
Okay.
That's minimum wage in here, Mexico.
All right. All right. And can you, I don't know much about where you are and don't tell me, of course, but is that enough to have a family?
No, it's barely enough for me.
Yeah, it's quite amazing that you can survive on $500 a month. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't pay rent, right?
Oh, no, I get that. Yeah, you couldn't do it if you paid rent. And is it manual labor? Is that right? Okay. All right. And what would you need to do to get a higher paying job?
To have a degree or to just be an entrepreneur at that point.
And that would be another red flag. Were you unemployed when you met your girlfriend, like almost three years ago?
No.
Oh, and you had a job like this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another red flag. Is a woman in her late 20s going for a guy who makes less than $4 an hour.
Right.
Okay, so to get a degree would put you into your mid-30s. So that's tricky, and I assume it costs some money to do that. So
yes.
What about entrepreneurial stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to self-publish some books. I still don't have the details, you know.
Sorry, you mean some books that you've written?
No, that I'm writing.
Oh, that you're writing now. Okay. And what's the status of your writing? How close are you to finishing the book?
Oh, I'm not close at all. I finished the first chapter, and that was about it.
And is this fiction or nonfiction?
It's fantasy fiction.
Ah, okay. Okay. So if you self-publish, you would try to get, you would try to sell it or get donations based on the book, right?
Probably donations.
Okay. And have you taken any writing training?
A little bit.
Okay. I mean, that's a long shot, right?
Right.
It's pretty tough to make a living as a writer of fiction. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's not impossible that you can make money playing the lottery, but it's unlikely, right? Although, I would definitely say keep going with the book. It's better than playing video games, better for your brain and all of that. So I would say, yeah, keep going on that. But that's kind of a long shot to make money. And I say this as a guy who's written a bunch of books and self-published most of them and all of that. It's pretty tough to make money writing books.
Right, but I think still will be better than what I'm doing right now.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, definitely keep going with the writing, in my humble opinion. Like, it can't do you any harm, and it can only do you good. And again, you're a young single man, so writing makes really good sense. As something to do. And the problem is, of course, that you're not moving in any entrepreneurial circles. Like, I assume that nobody that you are close to is brimming over with business ideas or wants to start businesses or has business experience, right? You're kind of stuck in this bottom of the economy, right?
Right.
Right. Right. And can you get a roommate to help you with your income?
Well, that's a good idea, perhaps.
I mean, if you have an extra room, or even if you're willing to. I mean, I lived in a room with a guy when I was at university. So, okay. So you don't have much of a plan. Again, the writing is great, but I wouldn't put too much expectation in that to be a big moneymaker. Again, but it's a good thing to do. And it certainly is good for your brain and good for your skills as a whole. Can you get into any kind of job that would involve selling?
Yeah, I think that's possible.
That's a good route up, because if you're willing to be trained in sales, you don't have to get a degree. If you believe in the product and you like helping people and you like making money for people, helping them make money or save time or whatever it is, then sales is a very good way to start making money. Sales is usually also low risk for the employer, because oftentimes what they used to call it, eat what you kill, which means that if you don't sell, you don't get paid. But if you sell a lot, you get paid a lot. So it's low risk for the company. And if you're willing to read books on sales and willing to learn about sales, it's something that I learned about as a teenager. It's really a very important skill to have, to learn how to sell. Everything in life is about selling yourself to people to some degree. And so if you can get a job, it could be anything, SIM cards, solar panels, aluminum siding, like anything that you can get that's going to have you go from place to place and learn how to sell is a great way to break into starting to make some money and also learning some really important life skills. Because obviously you're far too smart to be just doing manual labor, right?
Right.
So sales is a great way to get into the business world and to learn some really important skills. And, you know, after you spend 6 to 12 months selling stuff and you have some success, then you can start to sell cars, or, you know, you start to move up in the sales world. And then eventually maybe you could do, you know, software sales. That's sort of where I was at, sort of big high ticket price software sales like Salesforce or SAS or things like that. So that's a pretty good way to start moving up and not requiring, you know, massive investments in multi-year education, but just go out there and just start hustling and just start selling. Like when I was a teenager, I sold my typing services because I'm a pretty good typer. And I had a printer, which was kind of unusual at the time, because this is back in the early 80s. And so I typed things for people. I did that work for people. And you just got to hustle like crazy and try and find something that you can do that's going to be of value to other people that they're willing to pay for. And sales is a pretty good way. If I were in your shoes, I would just do anything to get a sales job. And I would do I would watch a whole bunch of videos and read a whole bunch of books for the next month or two on sales, and then contact companies and say, look, I don't have sales experience, but let me tell you all the books I've read, and let me tell you all the videos I've watched, and I'm really raring to go. And please just give me a chance. You don't pay me anything unless I make sales for you. I'm happy to just do all of that. And then if you get the right mentor, like somebody who's your boss, who really believes in you, that boss will also help you learn how to sell. And, you know, sales, there's nothing wrong with it. A lot of times people are way too hesitant to buy things and they should just buy them. You know, people who are like, oh, I don't know, it's maybe not be right. It's like a salesperson will just get people to get off their asses and buy something. And, you know, they can always return it if it doesn't work out for them or whatever. But this, you know, a lot of people just faff back and forth and it's like, oh, should I or shouldn't I, this kind of stuff. And so salespeople can be very helpful in just getting people to, you know, crap or get off the pot, so to speak. And it can be a very energizing and positive thing to be doing with your life and gives you a lot of great life skills. So if I were in your shoes, I would aim directly at sales, but make sure you do a bunch of reading and educating yourself before you go for that, so you can at least learn the language, learn the approaches and so on. But yeah, sales is a very honorable, I'm in the business of selling philosophy to the world, so to speak. It's a very honorable profession. I know that they're sleazy salespeople, but they're still, the sleaziest salesperson is still better than the average academic or all academics by category. So if I were in your shoes, I would take that approach, and that would give you more confidence, it would give you more charm, it would give you more smoothness. And once you recognize that you can bring value to people, then that's going to be the case with the dating world. And in the dating world, what I would say is that a relationship, it only succeeds when you look at your partner or you look at your girlfriend with genuine admiration. You know, like I see this with my wife. You know, she's a fantastic hostess and she's a great storyteller. And, you know, I look at my wife when we have like, you know, 5 or 10 people over for a social gathering or more. And I see her like gliding around, telling stories, making sure everyone's doing well and just everything's working beautifully. And it's not just at those times, but at those times, sort of the most memorable, I look at her just with immense pride. Like I really admire her and I'm very proud to be her husband and very proud that she has chosen me. I deserve it, but you know, I've deserved a lot of things, but it takes a special person to recognize them. So I don't imagine you had that with the girlfriend who was still in contact with her ex-girlfriend and the guy who paid her for sex and so on. You did not admire her. You didn't look at her and say, I am proud. Man, she makes me look great. And I remember this is all the way back in the beginning of my business career when my wife would come to business weekends or she would come to conferences and so on. She was just gracious and poised and a good listener. Of course, she practiced psychology for 25 years. She's 27 years, in fact. So she's very skilled at that. And I just admire her. And I look at her just with immense respect and how she handles herself and her poise and her grace and her charm and her wit and all of that. And so the next time you date, you just have to look and say, do I really admire this person? Do I look up to this person in some ways? Not like you're inferior and they're superior, but my wife has a way of hosting gatherings that is just fantastic. And that's just one of the skills that she has, but it's the one that's most in display these days. So if you can break into sales, it's a low investment way to get into the business world and you will learn some great skills. And you'll also learn a thick skin, right? Because life has a lot of rejection. And when you start out in sales, you generally are dealing with what are called unqualified leads. Like you're just knocking on doors, you know, like the old famous foot in the door trying to sell someone a vacuum cleaner. And you are going to get rejected a lot, but that gives you a thick skin. You don't take things personally. And that's going to be very good for you in the dating world because you have to get used to rejection to get to quality people as a whole in the dating world. So I would say those things. Get into sales if you can. This, again, this is my advice. You can do whatever you want. It's just my particular, what I would do if I was in your shoes. Yeah, get into sales if you can. It's the easiest and best way to get out of the bottom of the economic ladder. And also make sure that you don't date anyone that you don't fundamentally admire and respect. And you think of that, if you become a top tier salesman, which I'm sure you can do, and then you're at some corporate retreat and you want a girlfriend who's, or a wife or a fiance who's just going to make you look fantastic, who's going to be gracious and wonderful and poised and a good conversationalist and so on, and is just going to make you look fantastic, and you're going to make her look fantastic. And I think that's the basis upon which to judge people on who to date. And it's something I wish people had told me when I was younger. So I'm telling you now, if that makes any sense.
Wow, that's huge. Thank you so much. That's great advice.
You're welcome, brother. Well, we've hit our 2 hours. How was the conversation for you as a whole?
It was amazing. I mean, I know it's surreal because I've listened to these financials many, many times, but being here is another experience.
Well, that is true. That is true. All right. Well, listen, I hope you'll keep me posted about how it's going. And if there's anybody who contacts me who wants to help you out professionally or anything like that, I hope you don't mind if I'll forward it to you.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, he's a free domain listener, so he's got some good honor and integrity. And if you're in this environment and you want to talk to him, please let us know, support@freedomain.com. And massive sympathies for your childhood. I'm glad you got out of this bad relationship, and I'm sure you have good things to look forward to. And I hope you'll keep me posted about how it's going.
Sure. Thank you so much, Stefan.
Thanks, Emil. Bye-bye.